welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Feature Interviews. Today I have a fabulous guest whose film's been out for years, but he never contacted me about it. We'll get into that. Chris Morrissey is here. He's a writer-director of a fantastic film called Trick of the Witch. Hey, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So let's start at the beginning. Your film came out in 2010, from what I've read.
Yes.
And it's still touring today?
Yeah, basically, all of my films have all had theatrical releases. I've pretty much, you know, every film I've made, I've specifically geared it towards theater viewings and film festivals. So what happened with Trick of the Witch is we made the film in 2010 and it premiered at the New York International Film Festival around, I think, October of that year. And it actually won a bunch of awards, and it was like the audience award, and it was a sold out screen. We had like back to back people just, you know, sitting in the aisles. It was really crazy. And I was not expecting that many people to show up. So the film ended up doing a theatrical tour in LA and New York. And then it, some other film festivals invited us, and we were going to put it out on Blu-ray, but we just kept booking more theater screenings and more film festivals. And then I ended up making another film called Heavy Makeup. And when that film was finished, we did like a double feature with Trick of the Witch and Heavy Makeup. So there's just been all these delays on getting it out to like streaming audiences and putting it on Blu-ray. But I've loved the fact that it's been in theaters and people were experiencing it. That. So it was just, you know, okay, let's keep doing it. Let's do it until, you know, we can. And then with the pandemic, I finally just decided to go ahead and put it on YouTube just to like get people, you know, that haven't seen it or weren't in the cities that it was playing, give them a chance to see it and watch it for free. And now we've actually got invited to do some more theatrical screenings at the beginning of 2022.
So let's go back. 2010 comes out. You figured you're just going to dump this on DVD afterwards. And 10 years later. So how does that feel as a filmmaker? Something you thought was going to go not far, let's be honest. And it's done amazing. I mean, how does that make you feel? And then you have a double feature with your next film. Like, that must blow your ego up.
Well, you know, that's the thing, because I grew up in a family. My dad used to manage the Cinerama Dome. And so I kind of grew up in the whole theater world. I would get out of school and go straight to the movies, and that was my babysitter. So I saw so many films in the theaters that when I became a filmmaker, that was my whole goal. Like, I just saw so many people making films that would go straight to DVD or go to a film festival and then not even get distribution. So I kind of like just went straight to like, okay, these films need to play in theaters. And I have a list of all the theaters I wanted to play in LA. And I just kind of was able to self-distribute and just get it out there and then build up like an audience. And these film festivals ended up inviting me, like, we want to show Trick of the Witch. We hear it's, you know, like, you sold out and did all this and that. So, hey, you know, come bring your films. And they would just kind of invite us. And we're like, okay, let's keep doing this. Let's keep showing it wherever we can. And, you know, it's been such a great experience. So I'm kind of excited that it's got this like new, audience that are going to be watching it for the first time, that, you know, and it's different being at home, because I never was somebody that liked to watch movies at home myself.
So how does, cool. How does filmmaking change for you from 2010 to 2022? What's the biggest change? How do you feel as a filmmaker you've evolved with these changes?
Well, I think the biggest change is, because I've made six films already. So I'm at the point where I look at my really early films and you know, I think, oh, I could have done this so much differently or so much better. I think the main thing as a filmmaker is I tend to overshoot and overwrite. So sometimes my scripts and you know, scenes can be very long. So I end up cutting down, you know, a solid hour and a half to 2 hour movie, but I really probably have like a 3.5 hour cut of some of the films that I've had to, you know, get rid of certain scenes that I love and certain characters. So I guess the biggest thing for me in this 10-year period is all the projects I've done since then. I've been very like, you know, I edit when I write now, and I purposely try not to overshoot stuff. I just get so excited about the characters and always am coming up with, you know, little plot twists that I want to, oh, let's shoot this. I wrote this other scene that I want to add in. And, you know, sometimes it's for the better. Sometimes it completely like throws things off.
Okay.
I'm more disciplined now.
Great. Okay. I'm going to get into Tricks of the Witch, because we could discuss filmmaking for 40 minutes without a problem. People would not be upset with me. So music, I find right off the beginning and throughout the film, you use music to set the tone and the scale of the scene. Was that your plan?
Yeah. You know, it's really funny because a really good friend of mine, that's a musician. Him and I grew up, you know, going and watching all the, you know, 80s and 90s horror movies. So he knew like the type of music that I wanted for the film. And so I kind of just named different films, and I was like, okay, like I want a little bit of Nightmare on Elm Street. I want a little Friday the 13th. And he knows all, you know, soundtracks. So he came up with the music and, you know, just handed me a CD of like 20 different, you know, score songs and stuff. And I just was like listening to every single one and just kind of imagining what would go with each scene. And it just like melded into the film perfectly. And now I always have him, you know, score my films.
So he's scored all 6 of your films?
He did 4 of them, because on one of the films, I just got music from different musicians, and I didn't really have a lot of score music. It was more like just songs in the background, you know, with actual vocals and stuff.
This may be a difficult question going back 12 years, but I have to ask anyway. I found all your actors had different hairstyles. I found that you really worked on the look of the character.
I think that kind of came out of when I cast roles, I really try to, I want each character to be unique and memorable. And I notice a lot of films these days, you know, they have casts that look so much alike. So you kind of don't really connect with certain, you'll be like, is that the same girl that was just running down the street? Oh, wait, no, that's a different one, but they look so much alike. So when I'm casting, I really try to like make people be so different and stand out on their own. And sometimes the hairstyles are just like, you know, certain, I've had situations where certain actors might cut their hair or dye their hair in the middle of the shoot. And I'm like, oh God, like, how are we going to fix this? So there have been a couple of times where we've had to like, you know, have them throw on a wig or things like that, that, you know, just kind of were happy accidents, I guess.
As a director, but isn't that, you tell them that ahead of time that they're not supposed to cut their hair or dye their hair, or they just don't listen to you?
Oh, you know, that's the one thing I've really learned over the years of making films. It's like no matter what you tell your cast, as amazing and professional as they are, like there's always going to be that one person that like cuts their hair in the middle of a shoot. Or I mean, I had one person that had like the perfect hairstyle for this role, and he shaved his head. He gave himself like an army buzz cut, and we had shot a couple scenes before that. And I was just like, the only thing we can do is like put a hat on him so we don't see his hair. And I mean, we were able to make it work, but there's always that one little thing. They're so sorry. They're like, I didn't realize that it was going to throw things off, but now I'm just always aware of, like, you know, being super specific about, please don't change anything. Please don't dye your hair. Don't cut, like, your long nails, whatever. Like, that's going to just be so noticeable.
So when you're designing your film, like Trick or the, where do you start? Do you start at the beginning of the film, or do you start at the end of the film, or do you start with the character?
A lot of it, I'm a pretty quick writer, so I usually will, you know, write the script within it, like, a few weeks, or sometimes not even that long. And then as I'm casting and as I'm picking out locations, that's when it all kind of comes together for me. Like, the one thing I love about writing and directing is if I need to make changes on the spot, like, I could literally, like, write some changes or write a new scene to make it fit, like, a location or the design. And the house that we actually used in Trick of the Witch wasn't going to be the original location. It's now, you know, in the film, it's a huge mansion that we filmed in, but originally it was going to be in this kind of, like, cottage in the woods. And right before we were, probably 2 weeks before filming, there was a big flood in LA, and, you know, it never rains in LA. And the whole place we were going to use got flooded. So I ended up getting that mansion, and it just made the film a whole totally different look of the film. So it kind of comes together on its own.
I would say the mansion is a character of the film, and I want to discuss, where did you find that mansion?
That was the funny thing, because it's outside of LA, not too far, but originally, I had a friend that's a real estate agent, and I had called him up when we lost the original location. I'm like, do you have any houses that are empty or that you're selling that the owners might want to allow us to film in? We can, you know, this is our budget. And he said, you know what? I don't have anything, but my sister has a really nice house. You should come check it out. And I said, where is it? And he told me where it was. And I was just like, oh, I don't think that's going to be really the right fit, because we want something that's going to be kind of like in the woods. That's going to be kind of spooky and mysterious. So we kind of hesitantly went down to this location. And when I got out of the car, I'm like, just like in the film, everyone's like, oh my God, look at this place. That's how I was. I was just like, wait, we could film here? Like, they really want us to use their place? Like, they're going to allow us to use this huge mansion? And they were so excited. They were like, we love the fact that you want to film at our place. And, you know, like, even if you don't have the budget, like, we'll work with you. And it was just really cool. So that was just kind of like part of the film that just kind of came together on its own. And I feel like with Trick of the Witch, it was kind of based off of Italian witchcraft, the Stregeria. So there was actually a real spell in the film. And all these crazy things happened when we were filming, and also after we finished filming. So I almost feel like this film kind of came together on its own, because there was a little bit of, like, reality mixed in with the, you know, the fictional stuff. And it was kind of like the film had its, like, weird kind of, like, it wanted to, like, come together this way.
Hold on. I'd be in trouble. What crazy things happened that you're not telling me about?
Well, like, there's one scene in the film where they're fighting, and there was, like, this huge blood red full moon in the background. And that was real. Like, we just happened to be filming in this desert area, and, like, there was this giant moon. And I was like, this looks so fake, but we have to film the scene right here. And in the film, like, I've had people say, oh, is that moon real? Is it, like, CGI? And I'm like, no, it was there on the location. And then during the scene where they do one of the spells, where the characters are laying on the floor paralyzed, that was when we used the real spell. And during that whole night of filming that scene, like a fire started, people on the set were getting in arguments that would never have, like, argued before. Just just so many crazy things were happening. One of the actors got in an accident and couldn't get to the location. It was almost like the scenarios in the film were starting to happen in real life. So we just kind of were like, okay, let's just find a solution to make the best out of it as we can. And let's just, you know, let's get it done.
I'm going to have to ask, did you do any design work to the house, or is that just the way it was when you showed up?
It was all like that. It was like all those candles, all those statues. It's like when I walked in and saw it, I was just like, I can't believe like we're going to be filming here. Like this is everything I envisioned when I thought of having a location like this. But it was like, I just kept saying, this is too good to be true. Like there's got to be a catch. Like they just probably want tons of money, you know, for each day of filming, or there's just something that doesn't feel real about it. And then, but everything was perfect. It's like, yeah, you can film. We had the location for 2 weeks and we filmed as much as we could. And it looks so good on the actual film. So I just feel like it was part of like a blessing that just happened.
Okay, I'm going to go with some things. When you're driving a car in LA and you found parking no problem, I thought that was pretty funny.
Wait, say that again?
You have a driving scene and your main character pulls up to the house and parks in her apartment in 2 seconds.
I'm yeah. That doesn't.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that was little things like that. I mean, whenever we had certain scenes and we, you know, needed these scenes to work out the way it is in the script. I mean, it just kind of, things were so easy when most of the time when you're making a film, like, you know, we've had times where like the streets shut down. So everybody has to park like, you know, 3 blocks away or, you know, and carry all the equipment and, you know, we can't even get down into the actual location. So, I mean, it's like, that was like, I feel like sometimes when you're making a film, like it just kind of happens the way it's supposed to happen. And even as much as you plan, it's never going to be the way you planned it, but it's either going to be something good, like a happy accident, or it's going to be something crazy where you're going to have to come up with like plan B. And sometimes the plan B turns out to benefit the film.
So when you're looking at locations, like apartments and places of business, what do you look for? Cheapness obviously is one factor, but what's the second factor?
I think for me, because I grew up in LA, I'm from LA, so I know the city so well. And I know, I guess when I'm writing, I try to write with locations in mind that I know I could use. Like I have certain friends that they're always saying like, hey, if you ever want to film here, like, you know, you can use my apartment. Or like, I have a couple friends that own restaurants and they're like, if you ever need like a restaurant scene, you know, we're waiting for you to come film. So I try to write with all that in mind. And I try to, you know, think of locations that maybe it wouldn't be too noisy or it wouldn't be too hard to film. So I really just, you know, take as much as I can of my knowledge of LA to make it work, I guess, for the best. And so, I try not to write stuff that's going to be too hard. Like I'm, you know, not going to film on Hollywood Boulevard where there's so many tourists and crowds and car noise, you know, cause that just would be like chaos.
I think you could do it on a Sunday morning. First thing.
Oh yeah. That would be, yeah. That time would be pretty empty.
So I want to go back. You have a scene that takes place at the clothing warehouse, you call it.
Yeah. Now, that. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to finish. How was shooting in that? Did you have to import all the clothes or you're at a clothing warehouse?
No, see, that was another thing that was kind of like a happy accident. I really wanted to get a sponsor of like a clothing company or like, you know, just somebody that we could, a brand that we could team up with and have all the characters wear their stuff. And, I reached out, I had a whole list of different brands I was going to reach out to. And, this company, IB Clothing, was, a friend of one of the actresses. And she just said, hey, you know, like my friend's, has a whole clothing company. And, you know, if he knows that we're filming this, he might want you to see his clothes and you might be able to use them. And so we went and met with him and he was so excited to have his stuff in the film. And then that's when he's like, oh, and hey, you can film here too. This is like my manufacturing warehouse. Like if you have a scene that you think you can film in, I'm like, I actually do. Like there's a whole scene that's supposed to take place. So yeah, if we can, that'd be great. And that was just all part of like the brand deal. So all his clothing was featured in the film and we got to use his location. So, and that was something that we didn't expect, you know, when the script was being written.
Does Western Steve Plaza still exist?
I'm not sure what that.
You go to a plaza and your characters get out and they have to go to the bathroom. And there's a place in the background called Western Steve Plaza.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's actually...
Western Store. Sorry, Western Store. Why am I saying Steve? I apologize.
I know. I was like, what? Yeah, no, that was another like coincidence. We filmed those desert scenes in Palmdale because one of the other locations was in Palmdale. And when we drove out there from LA to... you know, locked down the location, I kept seeing, you know, we drove down that road with all these little knickknack stores and there was like the country store. And so we did exactly what happens in the film. We just pulled over and checked it out. And then, you know, the owners were like, oh, you guys are from LA. What are you doing here? And I was like, well, we're actually coming here to film a movie. And they were like, oh, well, you can use our place if you want. And I'm like, you know what? That would be great because I have a scene that would work. And they were just like, yeah, come film with us. Like, let us know when you need it and we'll clear the store for you. And there's actually some deleted scenes that didn't make the final cut, but there's like a whole scene that takes place inside the store. And then there was a scene with supposed to be where the girl working at the store is warning the main character about some eclipse that was happening. But that scene got cut.
Oh, I'd love to see that scene. I hope it's on the DVD. Cause, I mean, people need to see this store because it looks awesome from the outside.
Well, you know what's even better is across the street from the country store, there's like this oddities store, and they have all these really crazy like old toys and unique, like it's like a time warp of like 50s nostalgia, pop culture. And it's this weird curiosity. So they have like a giant dinosaur and all these big like animal statues outside. And I can't remember the name of the store offhand, but I mean, we were actually going to try to film there, but I just knew that there were so many like trademark items that would probably show up in the film that it would probably have to blur them all out. But it's a really cool, like highway. They have like all these really nice stores there.
So at one point you're filming in a car. So I guess you're literally in the passenger seat filming. How is it filming in a car?
Very well. I'm very tall. I'm 6'5". So anytime there's scenes like that, I can't do the camera. Like we had someone else doing the cinematography, but anytime we've done car scenes, even just trying to rehearse them and, you know, plan it out before we actually shoot. It's so hard because it's hot, the sound of the car, the wind, you have to keep the windows up. And if you have the air conditioner on, it's going to show up in the sound. So those scenes are always difficult. And that's another thing that I've always tried to now, when I write new scripts, like try not to include too many car scenes. And if it's going to be something that I can, you know, have someone film easily, like, then yeah, that's that's what I try to do now, because those scenes can actually take up the whole day.
Now I have to ask, you have some nice cars in the film. You have a BMW and a red sports car. Were they loaners, or do you own them, or where do they come from?
A couple of them are owned, and then there were some that were the owners of the mansion were like, yeah, you can use our cars. So those those ones were just, you know, very we were so happy to be able to use those. Yeah. And then I think the other one, the red one, that was one of the actresses in the film. And she just was like, can you use my car? I was like, okay, it looks great. So let's use it. So that kind of all just kind of happens. It like kind of all comes together. I mean, my whole thing is, you know, if you want something as a filmmaker and you think you can ask a friend or ask somebody that might have something you need, like if you don't ask, you won't get. So you might as well just pull out all stops and just see if you can pull in any favors, or, you know, just try as much as you can to, you know, get your money's worth if you have the budget for it, or even if you don't. Like, a lot of people are usually pretty open to saying, yeah, you know, if you give me a credit in the film, like, you can use this or have this. And that's why I'm always telling other filmmakers, like, don't worry too much about what you're writing, because you can probably get the props and stuff you need, but also have a plan B in case you don't.
Do you find being an indie filmmaker in LA, it's easy to get your locations and props?
I think, to me, because I've always been the type of person where I hate asking people for things because I would rather just be able to get it myself. But then I've always come across, well, if you don't aim high and try to get what you want visually in the film, like, you're not going to get it if you don't even try to get it or try to ask. So I always try to, that's why I like to be the writer and director and producer, because if it doesn't go the way I want it to, then I have the, I guess, ability to just make changes on the sly and come up with plan B, plan C, and usually it comes out good.
Better than I expected. This may be a weird question. What year does this film actually take place in your mind? I'm basing this on the cell phones don't look like iPhones or anything in 2010. They look like rotary phone. Not what I'm trying to say, or like razor phones.
Yeah, that's the one thing, because in some of my other films, like, I have a film that actually takes place probably in, I would say, the late 70s. But there were a lot of things where I knew I couldn't get prop wise. So I just made it kind of evasive on when the film takes place. So I kind of mixed together like different wardrobe and different props that could be from the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. So it just, I feel like it gives it more of the weird uniqueness to some of the films, to just people spot things and they're like, oh, that totally looks like it's from the 60s, but yet they're all wearing like 80s clothing. But this other character is wearing like a beehive wig. So she must be from, so I kind of like to just play around with that kind of stuff just for fun. Kind of throw the audience off and give them something to kind of like think about or question or laugh about.
So when you're talking to your lead actress, she's coming, she's pretty much the main part of the movie, your lead actress that takes over, Krista, that takes over the film. Do you give her direction saying, hey, this is an 80s film or an early 90s film, or you just let them go?
No, I mean, my main thing with most of the actors is I want them to really play things realistically, like, not to try to, you know, if it's a situation that's absurd, don't try to be funny. Don't try to be playing into the absurdity of it. Just take it as if you're really experiencing this. And the great thing I love about Cher Cherie, who plays Krista, she loves getting direction. Like, she'll try different things and she'll be like, you know, just tell me what you want. And, you know, if I have to do it different ways, like, I'm totally open to it. So she's really easy to work with, because like, it's almost like I can sit there and say, well, okay, I like that take, but let's try it this way now. And let me actually do it like this as well. And then when it comes to the editing, I have a lot to choose from. So I love actors that are just willing to like try anything.
Okay. Aldo is walking around in a shirt and a tie. How hot was it the day he had to do this?
Well, that was the great thing. We filmed it in January of 2010. So it was close to the mountains. So there was snow on the mountains. So the weather was actually really nice. It was only when we filmed the scenes in the desert that was hot. But the crazy thing is that it would start raining. We would be, you know, filming scenes, and then all of a sudden it just got cloudy and started raining. So all the scenes that take place at the mansion, it was perfect weather. It was so nice. It was so crisp. And everybody, you know, was there at like 6 a.m. and they all wanted their coffee and, you know, hot chocolate and all that because they were all freezing. But, you know, it actually just helped. It made the filming so much easier because the weather was great. I always try not to film movies in the summer. I try to film them like the beginning of the year in spring or like right before Thanksgiving and, you know, right around Halloween in November.
So you have a beautiful cemetery you shoot in. Did you stumble on this cemetery or knew it existed?
That was the thing. The people from the country store, I had said, you know, I'm really looking for a cemetery. If you can give me any kind of suggestions. And they actually drove us to this one cemetery that was like maybe 10 miles away. And it was just a really basic cemetery. There was only a few gravestones that were like standing up. The rest were just like plaques. And so we were like, okay, you know, this doesn't really look spooky, but we'll use it. And then the day before we were about to film the cemetery scene that's in the film, that's one of the things where we were filming some road scenes in the middle of the desert. And we had this rain downpour, and one of the streets got flooded. And we ended up having to take a different route to get around the flooded road. And we went up this mountain, and all of a sudden there was this cemetery. And it turned out it's a cemetery for some Buddhist monks. So we just went and asked them. We were like, hey, we're making a film here. Could we film for like a couple hours tomorrow? And we thought they were going to say no. But they were like, yeah. Just let us know what time and let us know how many people you're going to have and what you're going to be doing. And they said we could do it. And I mean, I can't believe compared to the original cemetery we were going to use. I mean, this was like, I mean, that cemetery that's in the film is just, and I wouldn't even know how to find it today because we stumbled upon it by accident.
That's awesome. Is the character Angel based on a real person?
Well, you know, no, but I wanted to have a character that was going to create conflict for pretty much everyone in the film. And it wasn't really based on a person, but there have been other projects that I've worked on where there was always like one actress that was like the diva. And no matter what we did to accommodate her and tried to like, you know, make it a really smooth shoot for her, you know, there was always some kind of like situation going on. So when I wrote the character, I was just like, okay, this is just kind of the culmination of different, you know, the one or two sour apples that I've worked with in other things that I just have to put in the script.
Now, when you have action in the sand, is that hard to shoot as a cameraman?
That, it wasn't too bad because I guess everyone was just excited to film. So we just knew that, you know, we could run into like, you know, situations where, you know, we had a stunt person that actually kind of helped us map out some of those scenes. But not enough to where like they weren't there when we filmed the scenes. We just like pre kind of rehearsed it like earlier in the day. And then, you know, the stunt person left. So it wasn't too bad. I think the most scenes that required like really specific to avoid anyone getting injured was the pool scene. And then the chase scene after the pool scene, because the actors were like soaking wet, and you know, the mansion has like marble floors, so they were slipping a lot. So we kind of had to just get that in a few takes without anyone getting hurt. But I love the way it looks.
So do I. When you're doing your fight choreography, then that was all pre-staged?
Pretty much. We had there was a scheduling conflict with one of the actors. So one of the actors that had stunt training, I specifically wrote those scenes for him, knowing he was going to be doing, you know, a lot of the stunt work. And then on the second day that he was supposed to film, like he couldn't film on that day. So I had to replace that character with a different one. And then luckily that actor, he had never done stunt work before, but he just kind of knew, because he's very athletic and stuff. He just kind of knew, you know, we just kind of went over like the basics for him, and it all worked out. It was really, again, it was like kind of like, even though there was a plan A, we had to go to plan B, but I think it made it for the better, because I like the fact that there were different actors doing the stunt work rather than just that one actor.
Okay, there's one shot I want you to walk me through. There's a window bathroom shot with arms coming out of the window at somebody.
Yeah, that.
Okay, I don't want to ruin it for the viewer, but I want to discuss that scene.
I'm a huge zombie movie fan, and I love Night of the Living Dead, and I know there's like a image, one of the poster images from Night of the Living Dead, or like an early book version of it. It shows all these white arms coming through a boarded up window. And I've always just thought, oh, that would just, you know, like, even though it's a picture, like, I would love to see that in a movie. And then I was like, I don't think anyone's done that. I mean, other than Night of the Living Dead, but I just thought, you know, I'm just going to do my little pay tribute to Night of the Living Dead, and I'm going to just throw it into the film. And so that's where that scene came from. It was my little Night of the Living Dead tribute.
Now, I wanted to know, did you work on the angle of that shot, or you always knew that was the shot you were taking from where you did on the side?
I had it visualized a certain way, but I didn't know what window we were going to actually be using. And I wasn't sure if it was going to, that scene that takes place in the bathroom, like, I just knew that the character was going to get locked in her room. And the only way she was going to be able to escape is through a window. But most of the windows in that house were like, they were windows that like opened up from the bottom out, I guess, like an awning. So that bathroom was like the only window that looked big enough to where, you know, we could just open it and she could actually climb out. So that we kind of had to do, like, you know, when we were scouting the house location, just like, okay, this is where we're going to film that one scene. It's going to be now a bathroom scene.
Okay. At the end of the film, you have a bunch of characters holding candles. Mm-hmm. Now, is that a CGI lit candle, or are you just playing light trickery on me?
No, those were real candles. And that was the day that we had that was the day we were doing the scene with the real spell. And one of the actresses was wearing a really long, flowy gown, and she set her candle down for a minute, and part of her dress started to catch on fire. So it was like one of those days where it was like, this spell that we're using is like causing chaos. So we immediately had to, like, you know, have her take off that flowy gown that like caught on fire for a quick minute, and just like reshoot it without her wearing it. Cause I was like, I don't want anybody to get hurt. I don't want any fires. You know, this is just the fact that it actually started to catch on fire. It was like enough to say, like, okay, but yeah, those were real candles.
Okay. At the end of the film, we have multi-motion. I don't know the proper term for it. Now, how was editing that scene and adding in that motion?
Are you talking about like when they're driving away? Or?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
That was just, we, cause I knew that we were going to, we weren't going to have, like, I've never used CGI in any of my films. So I knew that we were going to have to just like use camera tricks in order to get it to look that way. So, yeah, we just, that was just something that we shot specifically knowing like we're going to have to edit it to make it look like a trick. And yeah, we were able to just put it together that way. So it was filmed realistically, but the editing, you know, made its little smoke and mirrors to make it look even cooler.
The one thing I did notice, there's no blood in this film at all. Very little. If there was, I didn't really notice. Why is there no blood?
There were a couple takes. Like, there was the scene where the assistant wearing the suit and tie, he's like choking in the bathroom, and out comes. Yeah. I'm not remembering now if in the version that you saw, if was there blood that came out of his mouth, or was
no,
it like foam?
He chokes, and I think it's okay. Foam or something. There's no blood. I was looking for blood throughout the film.
So we had a few scenes that had blood, but knowing we were shooting in the mansion, I was like, I don't want to get anything stained or messed up, because that's happened before in other films where we like totally got hardwood floors stained red, and you know, so that was just one of the things. I'm like, anything that takes place in the mansion, like, I don't want, you know, if there's blood, let's take it out. We don't have to show it. Oh, and that was another thing too, because one of the producers of the film, when we, you know, we decided to make the film, she didn't want it to be very bloody. So she was like, you know, can you just make it more of a suspense thriller, you know, try to avoid any gore. And I was fine with that, because, you know, I've had other films that have had, you know, blood and stuff like that. So I specifically tried not to write too much blood. I wanted to make it more like, I guess, like the 70s TV movies of the week, where it was just more, you had to rely on suspense.
Oh, you definitely have suspense. There's no doubt about that. It's all here. Okay. Before we let anyone go, they have to answer three fun questions. So are you prepared?
Okay. Sure.
Okay. Your favorite film? Because it's your first time on the show.
My favorite. Do I have to just give one? Or
no, you can go 20. I'm really pretty easy going.
Well, for horror films, I would say Dawn of the Dead, the original 1978. That was like that was the first film I saw as a child. I think I was like 6 or 7 years old. And I mean, I was just so like blown away by like this whole epic film. But I also, you know, I like Robert Altman's Three Women. That's like one of my most favorite films, because it's so like, it's almost like a dream. And that's what they said, that Robert Altman, you know, he had the dream and he decided to make it into a film. And when I saw that film, that's what made me really think, gosh, I really want to make movies, because you can pretty much turn any idea or storyline or visual thing into an actual film. So I would say those two really are like probably my two most favorites that I could watch over and over again and not feel like bored or anything.
Now, since you went to the cinema pretty much every day after school, you must have had a favorite cinema snack.
Oh, well, you know, it's funny, because I love popcorn, but every theater had different popcorn, and you knew like which theaters had like the bad popcorn. So I remember the best popcorn growing up was at the UA movies, United Artists. They had the best popcorn. So anytime I would see a movie at that theater chain, like, I would always get the popcorn. I think they got taken over by Regency. So I think the popcorn's kind of the same, but the La Malle theaters has the best popcorn now in 2021. But if I was going to a drive-in, I would get Shakey's pizza.
Sorry, you go to get what kind of pizza? Sorry, I don't know. I'm unaware of this.
Oh, Shakey's pizza. I don't know if it's, I'm sure it's, I know LA has tons of them. I don't know if other cities do, but when I would go to the drive-ins, like that was the one thing, you go to Shakey's and get a pepperoni pizza and like bring it into the drive-in, because the drive-in pizzas were horrible.
I'm sure they are. And your last question's really easy. Your favorite film franchise?
Let's see. I would say, I mean, there was only two movies to it, so I don't know if it's, I don't know if they're ever going to make another one, but I really liked Dario Argento's Demons.
Nothing wrong with that choice. We'll let you have that. Now, before we let you go, we know it's coming back to the cinema. Where can they find your film other than YouTube? Can they buy a DVD? Can they come to a website? Let them have it.
Not yet. Right now, it's on YouTube until Halloween, and then it's going to be pulled. And then it'll either be playing around it'll be playing at, I guess it's going to be playing around February of 2022 here in LA. And then we're going to do some other theater screenings along with Heavy Makeup, which is my most recent film. And then we're going to release a director's cut and the cut that's on YouTube on Blu-ray probably towards the middle or end of 2022. And I might be releasing it with my own company, or I'm kind of talking to different Blu-ray companies to see if, you know, they might want to put out like a limited edition, because the film festival cut, which is not the one that's on YouTube, that's almost a full two-hour film and has a lot of those deleted scenes that I had mentioned. This YouTube version is the like final theatrical version. And, you know, that's the one that I want people to watch.
Thank you for your time and have a great evening.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I loved all your questions.